This is episode 97 of The Variety Artist. This is John Abrams, your host, and that guy that interviews successful variety artists from around the world every single week. Big news! The Variety Artist Shop is open. I've been working hard over the last month or so to create the very best swag with sayings from some of your favorite guests from my show. You can get a quote from master magician Peter Samuelson saying, "What would this be like if it were real magic?" Balloon storyteller Annie Bananes, "If you're working with people you love, they're going to love you." Comedy hypnotist Dale Kay's quote, "Be creative, it's fun, it's healthy, it sets you apart from the competition." And so many more. You can check out all the great quotes on all the swag at thevarietyartist.com/shop or go to my website at thevarietyartist.com and click the tab that says shop. Collect them all. I know that's what I'm going to do. All right, let's talk about the show. Today, we talk a lot about magic. But for you listeners that are not magicians, don't let that scare you away. Here's what I want you to do. Replace the word magic or magician with whatever art you do. Whether you're a juggler, a clown, a face painter, whatever, you're going to find tons of insight and great advice from my guests no matter what art you do. Enjoy the show.
Fun fact number 147. John played a nerd in the Pastels 60s rock and roll extravaganza.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
He's the former president of the Society of American Magicians and is well known for his educational school shows. He's headlined his own illusion shows and shared the stage with many top acts, including the Beach Boys, the Dixie Chicks, Trace Adkins, and many more. TV, theater, kids shows, corporate, you name it, he's done it. Variety artist, I give you Dal Sanders.
Ta-da!
What's going on, Dal?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, just getting it going, getting my coffee in me and a little water, getting it going this morning.
Well, here we are in the middle of winter.
Yeah.
Here in Texas, and I've got on shorts and a short sleeve shirt.
It seems like you're in my state in Southern California. It's like 72 degrees here or something like that.
That's Texas, y'all.
All right, let's talk about the SAM. I've always wondered this. What does the president of the SAM actually do?
Well, that is a great, great question. Basically, you provide leadership to the world's oldest, and we like to say most prestigious, magic organization. As you know, the SAM was, the Society of American Magicians was established in 1902. It's so amazing to look at what their goals were when they first started the organization and realize that's still the goal today. The goal is to elevate and advance the art of magic. You try to find different ways to keep magic relevant. In 1902, they were finding it difficult, so you can imagine how difficult it is even today.
I mean, yeah.
We carry in our pocket one of the most magical devices in the world with our cell phones. To keep magic relevant and important and artistic is a very, very a big deal. So that's basically what the president does, lead this group of magicians going in 100,000 different directions all at the same time. And you know, that's just guys from New York.
Well, it's interesting that you say art, because I have a story I've told a couple of times on this podcast. When I first started doing this business and doing magic, I put together a show and I sent it to what is called the Segerstrom Center here in Southern California. And they book out a ton of school assemblies and different things. And you have to be an artist, quote unquote artist. So I sent in my videotape. I got it back saying, we watched the first 5 minutes, and because you're a magician, magic is not an art, so we can't use you.
Isn't that frustrating?
Isn't that something?
Yes. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. And I've got a theory that the reason why, well, there's two reasons I think that magic isn't considered an art. One is because there are a lot of people that are just hobbyists. But there are just as many people who are painters or just as many people who are guitar players, and those things are considered arts. So it's not just that. But I think the other thing is magic is the art that actually hides its methods. All the other arts you can study the methods and understand the methods. But magic, we hide our methods. It isn't considered an art. They don't understand why it's an art.
Right. In fact, I was just, that's funny you bring that up. I was just talking to the Passing Zone about this exact thing, how the difference between juggling and magic is that juggling, you're showing off the years of work that you've done, whereas magic, you're trying to hide the years of work that you've done.
That's exactly right. That's exactly it.
I'm going to give a shout out to my friend, Brett Bolich. He's AKA Bretzo the Great of Southern California, because he had a question. Usually I reserve these for fan questions, but he had a question for you that I had a question myself, and you can fill us in on
that.
He asks, ask him how he is working with Congress to make magic a recognized performing art.
Well, that's a long story. For many, many years, I mean, decades, the Society of American Magicians had tried to get magic recognized as an art. So as I'm going up through the chairs, I was a regional vice president. They're saying, we want you to go to your local mayors and your local governors and try to get them to get these proclamations for National Magic Week. Make sure you use the phrase magic as an art, because eventually Congress is going to be able to look at all these things and say magic is an art and recognize magic as an art. And I said, I kind of raised my hand in the meeting and said, wait a minute. You know, we're a big organization. Do we not have any politicians that can help us get this done? And everybody in the room kind of looked at me like a hog staring at a wristwatch, which is, by the way, a saying that I'm trying to get out there. You know that there's something there, but you don't quite understand what's being said. When I realized that nobody really understood what I was talking about, I said, never mind. Carry on. And I got back and I talked to a friend of mine who is a magician and a member of our Dallas Magic Club. But he's also a politician. He's mayor of Wylie, Texas, which is one of Dallas's suburbs. They don't want to be known as Dallas's suburbs, but they are. They're just outside Dallas. His name is Eric Hoag. And I said, Eric, you're a politician. How can we get this done? And he just kind of smiled at me. And this is a guy that I've known since he was like 20. And he just smiled at me and said, I think we can get this done. So we started talking to then Congressman Pete Sessions, who loved magic, studied magic when he was a scout. We had several starts and stops getting this recognition, this initial recognition done. Then on April 24th in 2014, the initial congressional record, he read into the congressional record recognizing magic as an art. Now, this was just the first step. This is just the first step to getting magic totally recognized as an art. After this, the House has to vote on it. Then the Senate has to vote on it, a special resolution. Senate has to ratify it, and then it has to be signed by the president. Now, oddly enough, this is the same process that jazz went through in 1999, which ended in 1999. It took them about a decade to get it done.
Oh.
And you would think that jazz is a no-brainer as an art.
You would think so.
Because jazz is America's indigenous music.
Yeah.
But it took a little over a decade for that to happen. First, they got the one of the congressmen to read it into the record of the congressional record. Then they had the resolution passed in the House. Then they went to the Senate. Then it got passed, signed by the president. And that's what happened. So we are really at the beginning steps of getting magic recognized as an art. Since that initial effort, so many names have gotten on board with this. David Copperfield, Jeff McBride, the IBM is on board now.
That's International Brotherhood of Magicians, for anybody who's not a magician listening to that.
Correct. International Brotherhood of Magicians. The Academy of Magical Arts, the Magic Castle in LA is on board. This has really caught a lot of magicians' attention. Mostly, there's a lot of different reasons. One is, if we're recognized as an art, we'll be able to protect our inventions, our secrets.
Oh.
Get copyrights on these things. Right now, you have to either be protected because it's a play and a part of a play, or a mime.
So it has to be part of another art form.
Yes. But if we get recognized, we'll be able to protect ourselves. Plus, things like what happened to you won't happen anymore. People who are looking at giving grants will say, yes, magic is an art. It's a long process. And, you know, a lot of people are thinking, well, it got done in 2014. And it didn't. It just got started in 2014. We got the first step done. And that first step is always the hardest. If Congress wasn't so divisive right now, we probably would have had it done. But nobody can agree with anything in Washington right now. We're waiting our time.
When that whole process is done, do you think that the government will fund magic programs like they fund dance programs or
theater
programs, that type of thing?
Oh, yes. And already funding things are starting to happen. Hiawatha Johnson was telling me about, he's also a professor, he works in the theater department. And he got grants for costume building, costume making and prop building and choreography, lighting, stage, you know, and these are just little grants. Was able to produce a full magic show at his school for, just with grants, full theatrical magic show. And Cody Clark also got some financial aid because he put in the congressional record as part of his application for college aid. So, you know, he got some scholarship money from that. So it's starting here and there. You get little anecdotes, different people getting a little money here, a little recognition there. When we get it all the way through Congress and signed by the president, it'll be so much better. All these things will be so much better.
And who knows who the president will be at that time. Hopefully it'll be somebody who supports the arts.
Hopefully getting through Congress, it'll be getting through a Congress that supports the arts.
That's what we need to do. We need to all stick together, and whoever it is we vote in president next time, we need to make sure that at least on the side, they're a magician or do some magic on the side.
Well, we have a congressman that's a member of the Society of American Magicians.
Oh, who's that?
Representative Mark Pocan from Wisconsin.
Oh.
He does the coolest thing on YouTube. And you know, I know I'm supposed to talk about myself, but I can't.
That's okay.
Mark does these Magic Mondays where he'll explain something that's going on in Washington using a magic story.
Very smart.
It's just great fun. So here, there's a shout out to Representative Mark Pocan, member of the Society of American Magicians.
All right. Let's keep on voting him through, huh?
Yes.
If we get this funding, it's going to, I would think, grow magic exponentially, and especially with kids, because a lot of kids go and see a lot of shows, right?
Well, I've got to tell you, right now is one of the hottest times in the history of magic, for magic. Kids are just, they have so many opportunities to see magic every single day. Now, when I was growing up, I could see Mark Wilson and the Magic Land of Alakazam every single Saturday morning. Shortly after that, a decade or so after that, we started seeing people like Doug Henning and David Copperfield and the World's Greatest Magic Specials and all those things on TV. So that was a very, very hot time for magic. But right now, with Penn and Teller Fool Us and
AGT,
America's Got Talent,
yep,
World's Greatest Illusion.
Yeah, the CW thing.
Yes, produced by Gabe Blackstone. I can't think of the name of the show right now. Mm-hmm. It's just the hottest time for magic. Plus, there's a little show on Saturday mornings for kids called Cartoon Circus.
Oh, gee. Who puts that together?
Oh, a shameless plug guy.
Wait, before we get into that, and I'm going to get into that, weren't you given some sort of an award or something for your work with Congress?
Yes. This past May, and again, Gabe Blackstone called me and told me that I needed to make sure I went to the awards this year. The award banquet at the Magic Castle, the AMA Awards, Academy of Magical Arts Awards. She said, you need to get down here. And I said, oh, okay, great. I'll do that. And she's explaining the whole thing. And I'm thinking like, well, that story sounds familiar. I said, well, Gay, who is this for? And there was a pause. She said, it's for you. okay. I knew the story sounded familiar. Yeah, so I got a Award of Merit from the Academy of Magical Arts. And it was such a thrill. It was huge. It was just huge. It's the one night at the Magic Castle that even the magicians who won't talk to you come up and talk to you. It was awesome. It was just awesome.
All right, let's go back to the cartoon circus. What's that all about?
Well, that's a little TV show that we do. It's internationally syndicated, surprisingly enough. There's this guy who does this local show, and he did a whole lot of different types of shows. He does a scary movie show, and there's a Western show, and there's a mystery show, and he has different people hosting the shows. It's sort of like television back in the 60s, local television back in the 60s. And he was selling this to a little network that had five stations. They were in Dallas, Houston, McAllen, Texas, Sacramento, California, and Las Vegas.
Okay.
He had met Cindy, my wife. She was performing as her clown character, Boopsy the Clown. So he wanted to get her. He finally had gotten the rebroadcast rights on these old cartoons from the 30s, 40s, and 50s. Yeah. He had paid the fee. I think it's to the writers, not even the producers, but to the writers, to get the rights to use these cartoons and wanted to do a cartoon show. And so he called Cindy, and Cindy said, wait a minute, you need to talk to my husband. And so we went in and had a meeting with the guy. His name is Joel Stevens. And Joel laid out this idea that he had for a show, and he initially wanted just a clown, but he said, we could do a ringmaster and a clown. And I said, oh, that makes sense. I could be the ringmaster. Cindy could be the clown. He said that. And he got all excited, and we started talking, and he said, well, I want to get the educational and instructional button, the EI button in the corner from the FCC. Do you do any educational magic?
You said, well, yes, I think I might have something for you.
And he smiled and said, I've been writing and performing school shows for 40 years. He says, oh, well, you probably have some ideas. And I said, not only do I have ideas, but much to my wife's chagrin, I've kept every single show and every single prop.
No.
And he says, what? And says, I told him, I have a warehouse, and once a show is retired, I'll put it back in its showcase and put it over in the corner. And you never know when you're going to need something out of one of those old shows. And, you know, if you know, like, well, this is from the ecology show, or this is from a reading show, or this is from Say No to Drugs show, or anti-bully show. If you know where everything is, then you can just go and find those props and roll them into a new show.
Oh, yeah.
He says, and you've got them all in the original cases? Yeah. So basically what we do is we'll go in and we'll bring two or three of the shows in. And we'll do a full season in a week to 10 days. And so we'll pull three or four of the cases in. And each segment is about 7 to 10 minutes long. Oddly enough, each of my routines in my live shows were 7 to 10 minutes long.
Just like mine.
Yeah. So you just pull out the things. You perform that bit. You put it back. Pull out the next one. You perform it. Put it back. And so all these shows are getting, you know, repurposed. All these school shows are getting repurposed. And my wife, she always says, you know, I always think that we should get rid of this old junk, and then you find a way to use it again.
Yeah. So if you want to see Dal's work for the last 40 years, tune in to Cartoon Circus. You'll see it.
That's right. And it's kind of fun because the show started off with just those five stations. Then they picked up on the Spider TV network, which was all across America, which got picked up by Simul TV, which are all over the world. The guy that owns Simul TV, he's the largest provider of English language content in Asia. And he was coming through Texas, wanted to meet with Cindy and I, and we drove over to the airport, met him at the airport hotel, sat down and visited with him. And he said, I'd like to take your show. I took 86 English language programs to the Chinese government, and they approved 13 of them. Your show was one of the 13. And with your permission, we'd like to take it and put it across China.
Yeah.
And I said, with my permission, hell yes.
Yeah, that small little population that is China.
He said, well, since you have agreed to this, and, you know, as soon as you sign the contracts and everything, you'll be in 60 million homes by the end of the month.
Wow.
In China. And I said, what? And he says, and by the end of the year, I expect you to be in 90 million homes.
Wow.
And I'm going like, that's just unbelievable. He says, they're not all going to be watching the show. but they'll be, you'll be available in all these stations.
Yeah.
And all these homes. And I'm going like, well, that's just amazing. And the idea is they don't overdub the shows or anything. They use these shows to help people learn English in the other countries. Our little show is just about everywhere in the world. My two nieces teach English in Japan. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how excited they were when they turned on the TV one day and they're flipping through the thing and see my picture. They go like, that's Uncle Dell. That's Uncle Dell. And, you know, they, of course, FaceTime me immediately with a picture. Look, you're on. We can watch you on TV here in Japan. I'm going like, yeah, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, so I'm in Southern California. Where do I tune in?
Simul TV carries it. Actually, if you have a Roku, you can watch it very, very easily. Cartoon Funtime is one of the networks. Spider TV is one of the networks. And if you download Simul TV, S-I-M-U-L TV, they have all these different programming that you can watch. You can just flip through. You'll see my picture. Just click on that, and we're on that.
That's cool.
So I am actually doing the thing that I am performing the show that I watched when I was 7 and 8 years old.
Well, and you're spreading the love of magic to kids everywhere, not only with your show, but a couple of weeks ago, I had on Brian South, who used to be with Creative Magic, right? Yes. And now he's doing this thing, Discover Magic, where he's teaching magic to kids and having presenters teach magic to kids, including yourself, right?
Including myself. Yeah, Brian is one of my best friends.
Oh.
We've actually done some, you're talking about Discover Magic.
Yeah.
We've actually done some of the Discover Magic routines on our TV show. I first met Brian at a magic convention. Now, back then, I was writing shows, the school shows, and, well, creating magic for Ronald McDonald.
By the way, we're going to talk a little more about that.
Okay. But I was creating magic for Ronald at the time, and I was at a magic convention, and I'm just walking up and down the aisles looking for something new, and I saw a change cap. It's a change bag that's a baseball cap.
Okay.
And this was one of his creative magic new deals at the time and new things that he had created. And so I looked at it and I just something about it. I don't usually buy things at conventions anymore. Really haven't for a long time, but I'll get ideas and buy them later. But I bought this one right there, played with it a little bit and also looked at a couple of his other things. Flew home from Vegas from that convention. As always, if anybody follows me on Facebook, you know that if I get on a plane, I'm going to sleep.
That's one of our fan questions. We're going to get into that too. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt.
I am the best sleeper you are ever going to meet. I can sleep anywhere. I can go to sleep right now.
I hope not. That'd be a really sad podcast.
That's true. No. But going to sleep has always been very, very easy for me. I guess I'm too relaxed.
Yeah.
I fell asleep on the plane and then I woke up about halfway there with a start because I had dreamed up the routine that I was going to do with the change cap.
Hmm.
It was three cap Monty routine using three change caps.
Oh, so you went and bought that one cap and then you woke up and you said, I have this great routine, this great idea.
So I called Brian and I was still at the airport and I called him and I told him, I've got this idea. And he said, who is this? This is Dow Sanders. I bought the change cap. And he explained to him again.
He only met like 500 people at that convention.
I had just seen him like 4 hours earlier because I bought it just before I left. He said, well, why didn't you buy more if you had this idea? And I said, I didn't have the idea until I was on the plane. And he laughed and we ended up buying 300 change caps, 100 shadow tints and 100 bigger wands. He always says, put them in a whole new tax bracket.
I know you didn't buy all of those for yourself. So let's talk about the McDonald's thing. What exactly did you do for McDonald's?
Well, I wrote a lot of the magic. I got to work with a great team of some of the best people in the business, some people who are like improv people and jugglers and even a couple of other magicians. And I would head up the team and we'd put a team together and we would create the show. I headed up the group that wrote all the magic for all the Ronalds. The one Ronald.
For the Ronald, yes. A lot of people listening to this aren't my age. They're younger than that. And they may not know about the Ronald McDonald program. What was that?
Well, Ronald McDonald was the CHO, the Chief Happiness Officer for the McDonald's Corporation, McDonald's Burgers, for many, many years. And still today, he would represent the McDonald's brand.
Yeah.
He was the Goodwill Ambassador on behalf of McDonald's. Mm-hmm. Ronald McDonald House Charities was named after him, which gives children in the hospital, gives the parents of children in the hospital a home away from home while their children are gravely ill.
Yeah.
I still visit hospitals when I go to a town and visit kids in the hospital whenever I can. I've seen parents, you know, sleep in that uncomfortable chair in the hospital room, sleep out in the car. I even saw one mom make a little pallet underneath her child's hospital bed. Mm-hmm. Just so she'd be close.
Of course.
Well, the Ronald McDonald House solves that problem by giving the parents a home that they can stay in for hardly any money. I mean, you know, just it's a basically whatever you can afford situation. It's just one of the best charities, in my opinion, in the country. It's seriously helping people. And that's what Ronald McDonald was all about, seriously helping people. He would go into schools and he'd do a school show about, well, same things we talked about, mm-hmm. about being a good friend and not a bully,
right.
about leadership, about reading and all kinds of things.
In fact, that program and Ronald was so successful. Did you ever see the movie Supersize Me?
Oh, yes, I did.
There's one scene that always sticks with me. The guy who did Supersize Me, I can't think of his name right now, but he's showing different pictures, you know, pictures of very popular people, Muhammad Ali, you know, great men of our time. And a lot of the kids, they don't recognize these pictures of these famous people, including the President of the United States, all sorts of very famous people. And then he shows a picture of Ronald McDonald and every single kid says, oh, that's Ronald. Oh, that's Ronald McDonald.
At one time, he was considered the second most recognizable children's character in the country, right behind Santa Claus.
So how did you get involved with him?
I was in radio, mm-hmm. got a chance to work with an advertising agency that handled the McDonald's account.
Okay.
And then that grew, and I started working with other agencies around the area, around the country, around Texas. And it was just a long process. Oddly enough, though, the person that owned that first agency, his name was Jack Hodges. Mm-hmm. And he had a daughter named Cindy, who was off at college when I first started working with him. Well, when Cindy came back and went to work for her dad's agency, low man on totem pole has to take care of the talent, which meant that that was me. Mm-hmm. And I started working. Cindy became my boss. This woman is amazing. She is so beautiful. And she's smart, and she's organized, and she's a good businesswoman. I fell in love with her. And it took a while, but she finally fell in love with me. So McDonald's also gave me my wife. Oh,
I'd like a Big Mac, fries, and a wife, please.
And of course, that gave me a wife.
Now, I know this is off the topic of magic and all of that, but what do you think of the trend of the healthy eating trend? Because I don't think that's helping McDonald's at this time.
I have a couple of feelings about that. The first feeling is, no kind of food, nothing should be your exclusive only eating food. Anything is going to be bad for you if you only do that. All foods are good as long as it's in moderation. Mm-hmm. So that's the first problem. Yes, McDonald's unhealthy if you ate it all the time. Mm-hmm. So I'm not denying that at all. But the other thing is something happened during that a 50-year period. And that is that children stopped going out to play.
True.
On Christmas Day, I remember going outside and I'd see everybody in the neighborhood on their new bikes or their new skateboards or their new skates, which I could never master. You know, you'd see people outside playing ball or all kinds of things. And then something happened probably about, I'd say starting 25, maybe even a few more years before that, where people were just staying inside all the time. Kids were just staying inside. They'd never go out to play. Yeah. So they weren't getting any exercise. I think that's part of it, too. I think there's a lot of things that all came together to cause this issue that we have with food today.
Yeah, I have a theory about the kids playing thing. I mean, a few things come to my mind. First, I moved from a place that was, let's say, not too affluent to a place that's very affluent. I had some success in my business and I ended up moving. Anyway, when we moved, I looked at the different parks where we were moving to, and I said, oh, look at this beautiful park. Oh, my kids are going to have a great time playing in there. Oh, look at this beautiful park. And then when we moved, I took my kids to the park, and we were the only people there in the middle of a beautiful Southern California afternoon. And I said to myself, what's going on? So I started thinking about it, and here's what I think. I think the advent of video games, so kids are in their house much more than they were before. And secondly, the advent of 24-hour news. So the moms are now watching the news and they're paranoid to let their kids go to the park by themselves. So those are my two theories.
I think there's a lot of truth in that. When we look at one cause for social problems, let's call it what it is. The obesity issue is a social issue. Mm-hmm. When we look at just one cause, this is the reason, then you're missing all the other reasons.
Right.
If you want to change the way kids are eating and living and everything, you got to change a lot of things, not just one thing. However, I still want them to watch Cartoon Circus.
They can be indoors for an hour.
Yes. Well, we're only a 30-minute show, so.
I know we got all serious for a minute, didn't we? All right. Well, let's have some more fun. Who is Dusty?
Oh, he's new. He's new. His real name is Dust Bunny. Mm. And we got a new bunny who is just so much fur. We're going to have to learn how to groom a bunny. I mean, we've used bunnies in our act for years and years and years. I've had bunnies as long as I've had dogs. Mm. It is just a ball of fluff, a baby ball of fluff. You can't even really tell it's a bunny because it just looks like the stuff that's underneath your bed that you want to vacuum up. He is very happy to tuck his little nose up under my chin and sit on my chest for hours.
Now, something a lot of people don't know about you is that you were or are a musician, right? Not only a magician, but a musician, and you've written a number of songs. Is that right?
Calling me a musician, I'm not really. I work with some of the best musicians I've ever met ever heard in my entire life. I'm a songwriter. Mm. Yes, I play guitar, and yes, a little bit of keyboards and bass and things like that, but primarily I'm a songwriter.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So is there something else that nobody knows about you that you want to tell us?
Well, a few years ago, on the songwriting thing, I had one guy who loved my songs, and he was a promoter, and he wanted to promote my songs, but he said, no, you just write all rock songs. I need you to learn how to write country. And he was after me for like 2 years. We were working on fundraisers and other things, and he'd take me to country bars and said, listen to these songs. Your lyrics are better than anything that I'm hearing tonight, and you need to write country songs. And finally, I just got so tired of it. I turned to him and I said, Matt, who's running hell when you're here with me? And he looked at me and said, what? I said, who's in charge of hell when you're here beside me? And he said, is that yours? And I said, was what mine? He said, that saying, who's running hell? And I said, I've been saying that since high school. You've never heard me say that before. You haven't been paying attention. And he said, that's your country song. And I said, you're out of your, oh, wait a minute. Oh. And I happened to have my guitar with me on that thing. So I went back to the hotel at night. I was in Corpus Christi, went back to the hotel, started doing the song. By morning, before the sun came up over the beach, I had a song called Who's Running Hell When You're Here With Me. I put it up on a songwriter site, got a couple of people excited about it, and the band has recorded it. That began me writing country songs. So now I've written songs like Do I Love You or Do I Love Living Alone? And Stay or Say Goodbye. So you'll notice that my songs these days, especially the country songs, are kind of funny. The first listen, you say, oh, that's kind of a cool song. And the second listen, you say, oh, wait a minute, that's very funny. Mm-hmm. And third listen, you got the joke. So,
all right, we're going to do some fan questions. Does that sound like fun?
That sounds like fun. Everybody needs a fan.
Yes, and you have, one, two, three questions. So three that I wrote down, three that we have time for.
On a hot day in Texas, I need all the fans I can get.
There you go. Every week, when I interview somebody new, I put on my Facebook group that you can ask me to ask questions of our guests. And here we go. The first fan question is from Dawn Morgan. She is part of the Anthony Hernandez Illusions Magic Team. Well, you'll know why she asked this question, I guess. Do you still do illusion shows? And if so, who loads the illusions in, puts them together, and breaks them down and all?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. For many, many years, I did the illusion show. And for many years, I just did all the setting up and tearing down myself, along with whoever my cast was. And then about 2001, I said, hey, I should just hire people to do this for me.
Yeah.
And the hardest thing for me to do was letting go of that control and trusting people to set things up correctly the way I wanted them done. Mm-hmm. So that took some discipline for me to actually learn to trust my crew and believe in them and believe everything was going to be right. I still will put my fingers in the stuff, but pretty much now my crew says, Dal, leave us alone. We've got this. And I'm going, okay, fine. Well,
they've been doing it since 2001. All right, next fan question. Dana Barnum, a founder of Barnum Entertainment and Amusements, says...
I know Dana. Hello, Dana.
Oh, do you know Dana? Okay. She actually references something you said earlier. Ask him who takes all those pics of him sleeping on planes. It's creepy to know someone follows him around like that.
It's an app.
Oh, is it? Do you set it up and you're like, I'm going to fall asleep now. I'll set this for 15 minutes.
Oh, that's going to have to be my secret. It's such a weird thing. I did it on one flight. Social media, you know this, but for all of you people that are using social media to complain about politics and everything else in the world, stop it. Just use it to promote yourself. It's the greatest free promotional tool ever. Stop whining about the world. And I don't care which side of the fence you're on. Just stop. You're not going to change anybody's mind with social media. However, you can have fun. And if you find a way to get people to respond to you and to notice you and to share your posts, then that's a good thing, because you'll stay top of mind with your clients.
Yeah.
In fact, it's the Tom principle, top of mind.
Yeah.
I did it one time and got more response off that picture than I had from anything before that.
Is that right?
Taking the picture of me sleeping on a plane. I said, okay, I'm going to do that again. And now it's become a thing. Oh. Some people have started using the hashtag. They'll do the same thing. And they use a hashtag be like Dal on it, which that just helps me more. So thank you. Keep doing it. Yes, yes, yes. This gets the word out there. This gets more shows and more work. So,
all right, here is my challenge. Right after listening to this, anybody hearing this, post on your Facebook or wherever it is, post a picture of you sleeping. I'm going to do that. So when you look on the Variety Arts community Facebook page, you're going to see a picture of me sleeping, and you'll know exactly what's going on. And I'm going to hashtag that too.
Hashtag be like Dal.
I am definitely going to do that.
That'd be so much fun.
All right, next fan question. Adam Gertzikov, who writes the very popular blog Clown Link, asks, what are your thoughts on magic for non-magicians, i.e. performers who don't present a magic show per se, but want to use an effect or two to add to their show?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. There are some great resources. There's a book that David Ginn was part of called Clown Magic. He may have even written it. I'm not sure. That's got some great magic bits in it. For real basic stuff, go get the Mark Wilson Course in Magic. There's tons of easy to perform that still look amazing. Or I'll come out and do a lecture for your clown group.
There you go.
I actually do a lot of those. I'm going to be at the Texas Clown Association next year, or this year now. It's 2020. Yeah, I do a lot of these, but there's so much great magical looking things. The first thing that I learned that's not really magic that looks magical is a hexaflexagon. And I learned this when I was a kid, and I made one, and you can buy them now, but I made one, and it's a magical looking hexagon that folds in on itself and changes colors 6 different times. It's just incredible. And it looks so magical. And there's some other things too. There's some magic squares in that book. And just for the record, I fell in love with the book, so I stole it from the library.
Whoops. I'm sure that librarian is not listening to this.
I hope that librarian is retired by now, because like I said, I was a kid and I'm old now. So
yeah, she's looking on her big list. Oh, Dal Sanders, 19.
Yeah, there's all kinds of great things. Here's something that I think all clowns should do. Mm-hmm. Clowns are very big about going to their clown alleys and their alley meetings. They need to diversify. They need to also go to the magic club meetings. They need to go to the face painting guilds and the twister jams, the balloon twister jams. And in fact, this is something that all magicians should do too. Instead of just hanging out with magicians doing the same tired card tricks all the time, go visit the clown alley. They're doing some fun things. Diversify. Go learn how to juggle. Go learn how to paint faces, or just so you know something other than just magic. When you see me perform, you're not going to see just magic. I'm going to do some storytelling. I might do some juggling. I have a 5-minute juggling routine. My juggler friends look at it and say, that is the most basic juggling routine I've ever seen. I said, yeah, I know. You know, sorry. And then they turn around and say, but it's one of the most entertaining things I've ever seen a juggler perform.
Yeah, that's it.
Broaden your horizons. Look at all the different variety arts. This is a big, big family, and we should all work together. I want to take just a moment to get on the soapbox. Can I set my soapbox up here?
Yeah, please do. Before you do that, that's pretty much the end of the fan questions. But get on your soapbox and go.
Okay. When I started performing, doing birthday parties and things, I lived in Shreveport at the time, Shreveport, Louisiana. And some of the magicians and clowns and people would stab you in the back for a $50 or a $75 birthday party. When I moved to Dallas, I decided that was not going to happen anymore. I was going to do everything I could to avoid that. So we started a little company, which became our company, Amazing Attractions. These are not just me and my wife. We also have jugglers. We have clowns. We have balloon artists, face painters, the other variety artists, the circus artists. And you would call the company, and when we first started, a juggler might answer the phone, or a magician, or a clown, or a mime might answer the phone. Well, no, a mime wouldn't answer the phone.
Yeah, it would be like that sleeping podcast.
Yes, but the others would. If they couldn't do the show, then they'd refer someone who could. And we started working together, building a community. And we have a really, really strong variety artist community here in Dallas now. All these different wonderful, wonderful, amazing variety artists have come here. And I think a lot of it is because there's a sense of community here now. We're not stabbing each other in the back. We're trying to build up the community. We're trying to help each other. If you're not right for a show, refer someone who is.
Well, I totally agree with you, because I'm in Southern California and I belong to Kidabra, a Kidabra Southern California group. In our group, get this is who we refer business back and forth to: Robert Bax, Christopher T. Magician, Buster Balloon, Annie Banani. So all of these people in Southern California, we do the same thing as you do, and it helps everybody. What is it? A rising tide raises all ships.
Absolutely.
It is absolutely true. And I agree with you. And I think every single person listening to this should try to gather that up. That's my soapbox.
The issue is, at the end of the day, there is money left on the table everywhere, in every city, in every community. Don't tell me, oh, that wouldn't work in my community. We don't have as much business as Dallas. There is always money left on the table because people forgot about hiring a variety artist of some sort. Yeah. And the more we work together, the more we raise magic and clowning and everything else in people's memory, and they think, oh, I should get an entertainer for this party. Oh, wouldn't it be great if we could do such and such?
Yeah.
And it makes it top of mind. We come back to the Tom principle.
Yep.
We have to do everything we can to keep it top of mind. Even if I'm not working and someone else is working the show, that's good for me because that person may not be available next time. And when I work, that's good for him because I may not be available next time. So
yeah, and if you're working with people that are good and you're learning from people that are good, you become better. And when you become better, it raises the bar for other entertainers. And when people see you, the general public sees you, they say, oh, you know, I saw a good magician. I saw a good juggler. I saw a good yo-yo person, whatever it may be. And they have more of a tendency to hire someone else in the future.
Absolutely.
Okay, enough of my soapbox too. I'll get crazy with that. All right, do you have some advice for a beginner or pro, Del?
Well, it'd be pretty much the advice that we gave. Collaborate with others and practice. I see so many people who just don't practice, and I've been guilty about that myself, you know, wanting to do something so badly that I didn't practice it enough. Get out there and practice and practice and practice. Sometimes you have to practice in front of an audience of some sort, but do it.
How about a recommended book?
Oh my, so many great books. Okay, if you're a magician and you do not own the Tarbell Course in Magic, shame, shame, shame on you. That is, anytime I'm writing a new show and I have an idea for something, I go to Tarbell first.
There's volumes and volumes of magic in there. I can't get through the whole thing myself, or the whole thing. There's 5 books, 6 books, 7. What is it? 8? I don't know. It's crazy.
Yes, there's 8 books. So buy it, even if you only crack it open a little. My favorite is volume 4. A few of my friends will say, oh yeah, Dal's always talking about volume 4. Outside of that, the next strongest book, have you read Show Doctor by Jeff McBride?
No.
Oh my goodness. It's really, really a great book for the general practitioner of magic. And finally, if you're only doing kid stuff, there's a couple of things. The Silly Billy book, Seriously Silly, is good.
Yep.
The David Ginn books, Children Laugh Louder, Kid Biz, and Professional Magic for Children. Those are just imperative. Those must reads. You asked me for only one, and
I'm going to put all those on my website so people can review them, click them, go to Amazon, take care of biz. Well, that was fun, Dal.
I had a blast. Thank you so much for including me on this.
Oh, well, thank you for doing my show. Thanks for taking the time and hanging out with me for a little bit.
I tell you, I really have enjoyed listening to you. Oh. I enjoy your voice. I feel like you probably have had some radio training.
No, just done theater and magic for 20 years.
Well, I did radio. I got into all this because of radio. Hmm. So, you know, I can hear a voice and say, wow, that's a great voice. That voice should be broadcasting. You sound great.
Thank you. That's so very nice of you.
That's all I got. I want to thank you. Thank you for your time. And
well, thank you, sir. And thanks to all my variety artists. If you found this podcast valuable, spread the word. Make sure to visit my new store at thevarietyartist.com/shop, or just go to my website at thevarietyartist.com and hit the little tab on the top for the shop. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist, but your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.